I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Johns Hopkins University political science professor Lester Spence, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Jimmy seems to be getting his shape-up elsewhere this week. I'm sorry, guys, you're stuck with me. Sorry about that, but you'll just live through it, I guess, right?
And after the show, I'm going to visit Jimmy in prison. So
it'll
be great.
Oh, no. They don't lock you up for a bad hair day. They don't lock you up for a bad haircut. Like, not yet. Anyway, President Obama met with Senate Democrats on Tuesday to push forward the health care overhaul bill. And as I think everybody knows who's been covering this thing, that Senate Republicans have been pushing back and pushing back. They've been using all kinds of delaying tactics, including requesting a reading of the legislation on the floor. And when I say reading, I mean reading. I'll just give you a flavor of what your elected representatives are living through. Here it is.
Section 4001, Purpose. Section 4002, Definitions. Subtitle B, Innovations in the Healthcare Workforce. Section 4101, National Healthcare...
Do you love it? Ken, do you love it?
I can't wait to see the movie, if the book is that good. You know, we could talk about the Republican obstinance all we want, but really what we're talking about are two Democrats whom Harry Reid and Barack, President Obama, needs to win over. And that is Joe Lieberman. And Joe Lieberman apparently has come on board. Joe Lieberman objected to the public option, the Medicare buy-in from at least from the last couple of weeks. And Joe Lieberman says, I'm not going to sign up. You need 60 votes to pass this thing. Democrats, Harry Reid has 58 Democrats plus two independents. So they need everyone. They need everyone. They know they're not going to get a Republican. Now Ben Nelson, the center senator from Nebraska, who's very pro-life, very strongly opposed to abortion, he doesn't want any kind of language in the bill that would allow anybody to get subsidies for this health care bill to pay for abortions. And so the Republicans could argue all they want, but ultimately, if Reid can get every Democrat and the two independents on board, they pass the bill. But that's a big if.
And it's not just the abortion language. I mean, he was interviewed earlier today on NPR's Morning Edition. Well, there was an interview that he gave to a local station
in Lincoln, Nebraska,
where he says, you know, that's not my only issue. You know, I wanted to ask Arsalan and Lester, because I think you kind of speak often for the sort of the progressive side of the Democratic Party, as it were. Mm-hmm. Howard Dean, the former DNC chair, says, you know what, scrap the thing, start over. Arsalan, what do you say about that? And then Lester?
Well, I don't think that that's necessarily the path to take. You know, springboarding off what Ken said, you know, when it comes to Joe Lieberman and Ben Nelson, I'm reminded of the adage, with friends like these, who needs enemies? You know, at the end of the day, you're having two Democratic, one independent, one Democratic senator, essentially hamstringing this entire debate, you know, because of Joe Lieberman, who, let's not forget, lost the Democratic primary in Connecticut till Ned Lamont had to run an end around and essentially take all the Republican voters in order to win, showing that he really has only a constituency of one, that being
the
insurance.
But that's the way it is. I mean, so he's there.
Right. Well, but the thing is that, you know, when you have one senator who is wielding, you know, a disparate amount of power because he got the public option yanked, he got the Medicare buy-in yanked. Essentially, to those of us liberal Democrats out there, we're like, well, what kind of health care overhaul bill is this then?
So do you agree with Howard Dean?
No, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think we've come too far. It's like taking the ball to the, you know, 5-yard line and saying, all right, you know what, we're going to punt from here and then start from our own five.
Mm, Lester, what do you think about that?
I think Howard Dean makes a really, really strong case, but I side with Arsalan and Paul Krugman as well, as others who argue, like, listen, this is the closest we'll ever come. 31 million people who are not currently insured will be insured. There's never been a moment where those of us on the left have gotten the policy that we wanted from jump. What's happened is you get a policy that's really weak, and then we build on this. So what we do is we still work hard to get legislation that we want. And then I think what the bigger battle is not about just increasing the scope of this bill in the future, but it's also about hamstringing our enemies, right? Hmm. It's about literally making sure that people like Lieberman aren't elected next time around, because they really don't represent citizens. They represent corporate entities. And in order to create a more perfect union, we need to go in another direction. So that's what we need to do.
Ruben, what do you think?
I think this notion that somehow we just discovered that a member of the U.S. Senate might represent corporate entities
is ludicrous. I mean, where have you been? We've pick a senator, just any senator of the 100, you'll see that they represent different corporate entities. The two political parties have become like Visa and MasterCard, and this notion somehow that, that Democrats are more pure, Republicans are more pure, is just nonsense. The reason that Lieberman has so much power is simple. It's not because, you know, people hand it over to him. It's because he's an independent. They don't know if he can go this way or that way, so he can really negotiate. People think that because you live in a big state like Texas or California, you have a lot of power. That's not true. Both those parties, I live in a blue state. I used to live in a red state. The people who have power are people in purple states like Ohio, which they can go either way. So that's why Lieberman has power, because he's on the fence, you see. He can go either way. And I think there's a cautionary tale here. The reason that Barack Obama and the Democrats are having such trouble within their own party is because they did not make sufficient attempts to reach out to and continue to reach out to people like Susan Collins or Olympia Snowe, moderate Republicans who they could have peeled off by dumping the public option a long time ago. So now they end up in a situation where, guess what? They dumped the public option anyway, but they don't have any Republicans, which means they're being held up by Ben Nelson.
So what do you think? Do you think it's done?
Michelle, can I jump in here?
Yeah.
So I agree with part of what you said. That is,
Representatives
do represent more than individuals. They represent corporate entities, right? But there's a difference between a party that actually works to insure 31 million people who aren't insured and a party that does not, right? So I understand. So we've been moved to the right ideologically, but there's still a signal difference between those two parties, one. The second is that we have to there has to be some way in which we acknowledge these we have to acknowledge that the Republican Party has done really, really an excellent job of making sure that their party is the party of no. So it's not just about pulling people from the Republican Party to support the healthcare initiative in this case, because there's no way in heck that they would have done so.
Ruben, final thought from you, though. Can I just yes or no on the healthcare? Do you think they should dump the bill and start over or not?
I think they should dump the bill, but for a different reason, not because Howard Dean says so. They should dump the bill because it still is not good enough in terms of controlling costs. It still is not good enough in terms of drug costs and things like that. I mean, what Lester misses here is, you know, I'll take your insurance companies that you think Lieberman is fighting for, and I'll throw in the pharmaceutical companies that I would say Obama's fighting for. Until we have a serious discussion about how expensive drugs are in this country, then don't tell me somehow that you guys are the little guys fighting for the little guy.
But it wasn't based on corporate interest on the pharmaceuticals. It was because of an agreement that had been reached to sort of bring new people into the system, which would increase their profits in exchange for limiting imports. I mean, so anyway, Ken, final thought from you before we move on.
And quickly, even if you get Lieberman, even if you get Ben Nelson on board, that's the Senate. We still have a House which has the public option, which has the Stupak anti-abortion amendment. So the Senate and House, for all the applause and cheers you may hear if the Senate passes it by Christmas, there's still the differences with the House, and that could be a very, very long negotiation.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop. We're speaking with Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, Ken Rudin, and political science professor Lester Spence. Ruben, something you've been talking about, writing about a lot, has made its way back onto the news pages. Immigration reform back in the news this week when Illinois Democratic Congressman Luis Gutierrez introduced a bill on Tuesday, reviving this idea of kind of offering a path to citizenship for an estimated 12 million illegal immigrants. You wrote about this in a column titled Keep Ugliness Out of the Immigration Debate, and you talk about an unnamed conservative talk show host, wonder who, and his less than flattering rhetoric surrounding the immigration debate. And the question I think we have for you is, do you feel that is this really the time? I mean, if the whole country's sort of interest is focused on healthcare, number one, and Afghanistan and Iraq, number two, and then on climate change, is this really realistic? Or is this Luis Gutierrez just basically reassuring his constituents that, yes, we're still in the game, we're still thinking about it?
Well, it's also Barack Obama being pushed into a corner because he's actually got to do something he is loath to do, and that's keep a promise. He promised in speech after speech, including one where I was in the room at the National Council of La Raza conference last summer, to say, you know, if I'm elected president from day one, I'm going to start focusing on immigration reform. It is clear that he has bigger fish to fry, other fish to fry, and he is not as concerned about immigration reform as he is about the three issues he really does care about: climate change, education, and healthcare reform. So for better or for worse, you know, there's a tendency, I think, among some of the Latinos who supported Obama, of which there were many, to sort of say, well, you know, where's ours? Where's our guy? You know, you made promises. We accepted the promises. We voted. The talk show host in question is this minor leaguer.
Who is it, by the way? And why do you not?
Well, it's this minor leaguer who was setting in for somebody else. His name is the person in question. His name is Jeff Kuhner. He's not a radio talk show host. He's a writer at the Washington Times, but he hosts a pretty good show. And he was sitting in for Michael Savage, on the radio, and he hit certain hot buttons. He talked about, he's not the only one, but he talked about, we have to do something about immigration because we have to protect our language, our culture, and our demographics. And my thing is, when you start going down the demographic route, when you basically make the argument that the country is becoming more non-white and that's a problem, then you are down slippery slope into the Aryan Nation pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very unfortunate way for the debate to go. I'm not an open border Mexican. We should have controls on our border. But when you start telling me that the reason we need to do that is because you're afraid that there are too many Muslims, Asians, African Americans, and Latinos in this country, then don't be surprised if I yell out, hey, if the sheet fits, put it on.
You know, I hear you. Can I ask you, realistic or not?
Well, here's the problem. The Republicans effectively, first of all, they couldn't even get it together on an agreement. There was Bush and McCain on one side and the rest of the Republican Party on the other side. And that's when unemployment was in single digits. Now that it's 10% unemployment, you could see, I mean, for all Rubin would love to see the rhetoric be softer, you could see the rhetoric, you could see the harsh language coming out saying they're taking our jobs, especially with a double-digit unemployment. I says it's less likely than ever.
And Lester, final thought on this. I am curious, though, about this, the kind of language that Rubin is talking about. It's just interesting to me. On the one hand, we keep talking about this post-racial thing and all this other thing. And I understand that for some people, it's just kind of a conceit in words. And it's just interesting to talk about. But it is interesting to me that people can come right out and say, feel that they can come right out and say, well, the reason is there's too many of these brown people here. I mean, that's something you hear in some parts of the world, and you heard that, 50 years ago. But I don't know. Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not at all. Race is something that's if we think about race as something that we don't move beyond, like being post-racial, but something that's consistently produced and reproduced by our language and by institutions and by economic threat, then I think that what we're looking at is a point where race is actually going to become more important. It's just that the issues attached to it are going to be different because we're in a different moment in time.
I don't know.
Michelle, very quickly, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead, Ruben. I just can't wrap my head around that. I mean, people are here, and you've got people serving of all races.
Right.
You're serving in the cabinet,
yeah.
Serving at the Heiser. You have, people in space, astronauts, and I just don't get it.
I think we
get it. If you listen to the mail that you get, if you listen to the people who write into your show, who write into my column, there's a concern out there. Hey, what happened to me? This country's becoming more non-white. Where do I fit into that? And there was a story out just this week about the Census Bureau putting that figure at 2050 in terms of whenever we get to that point where the majority of folks in the country, the United States, are minority, then all hell's going to break loose with some folks. Some folks are thinking that's the day to put off as far as we can. That's the end of the world as we know it. And so obviously immigration wraps up in all this. But the important thing here I want to say is that just yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, threw a right cross at the Latino community and the immigration advocate community by saying basically, as a Democrat, liberal Democrat, I'm not going to force my members to walk the plank on immigration. We're not going to do this next year. We're going to do this in 2011. So it gets back to what I always say. I mean, the significance here is you get taken for granted by one party and written off by another. You find yourself in no man's land. The Latino community needs to be very careful with Nancy Pelosi, Watch that one. Don't trust that one. That one does not have your back.
And 2011, when you probably have 20 fewer Democrats in the House and probably
less.
Well,
that's the whole idea.
Exactly. Right.
Because the Republicans are doing so much better on this, right? Come on, Ruben.
You don't get to go to the black community as Democrats and say, the other guy's so much more worse, because in reality, you're the one who took the votes. You're the one who got the votes.
Well, you actually do get to say that, and it actually does.
Yeah, it does work.
I mean, there was a famous ad in D.C. a couple of years ago, where there, of course, two African-Americans running for mayor. One was a Republican, and the ad said, if he's for us, why is he with them? So there you go. Well, we can't end the barbershop without talking about the athlete of the year. I know. I'm sorry. Arsalan's rolling.
The decade.
I'm sorry. Athlete of the decade. And Arsalan, why are you rolling your eyes? You're just over it. You just don't want to hear any more about T.W.
Yeah.
And his situation.
I mean, especially in light of everything that's happened.
What do you think that he – I know you're very strong on sort of male misbehavior, and you feel very strong, particularly I think as a newlywed. I think it's very hurtful to you to see somebody behave in this way as a young married man. But you just think, but what about it? I mean, as an athlete, doesn't he deserve it?
Actually, I don't think so. The resident sports junkie, I would have to, I personally would have given the athlete of the decade to Michael Phelps. I mean, I think that, someone who's won 12 gold medals in the millennium, the detractors will say, he was caught smoking a bong. Well, I'd take Cheech and Chong over the Caligula ways of Tiger Woods any day.
Caligula, baby.
So, I think, 12 Olympic gold medals is nothing to shake his
12 majors over, I don't know. I'm sorry about that. I don't know. Lester, what do you think?
No, Tiger Woods has changed. It's funny because Tiger Woods' issue is actually related to the issue of immigration, right, where you have these people who, whites who have everything being theoretically being taken away from them. Golf was a white sport. I watched golf, right? I liked golf. But Tiger Woods has single-handedly changed golf in a couple of different ways. One is he actually made it a sport rather than a pastime. Two is he changed the color of it. And then there's all types of stuff wrapped in. He's the best athlete of the decade by far. And I think that 10 women basically shouldn't take that away from him.
Hmm. That we know of.
Interesting. Ken?
There's probably only 10.
He's not
Will Chamberlain.
And I was going to say, I do think that Tiger Woods should be the athlete of the decade because he is approaching Will Chamberlain's record. And I think that's one that that's
tough to reach.
I thought that would never fall either.
24,990 away.
And Ruben, what about you on this? I mean, what do you think? Can you separate his? I know you're another person. You write a lot about, you know, the responsibilities of being a father and how what you feel that that should mean, both in terms of, you know, conducting yourself personally and privately. Do you feel that he deserves it, even, despite his personal misconduct, which he's now admitted to finally?
I'd say no. I mean, the greed of the scandal, the fact that we know so much more than we did even 2 weeks ago, nobody has seen an implosion of this kind. You know, before the car accident in Florida, like 2% of Americans had a negative opinion of Woods. Now 80% of Americans have a negative opinion of Woods. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that when you have these 12 different, you know, mistresses, when you're, you know, reported allegedly to have frequented prostitutes and all this stuff. I mean, he has like come across as this man child, this guy who never grew up, who's this adolescent stuck in this, you know, early 30s body. And he's telling people, you know, I wish I'd met you first. I'm not in love with my wife and blah, 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 blah. All that stuff, I think, plays into the public perception of somebody. And it's not just a question of morality. It's just about the person. He's just not a very good person.
Well, I'm sorry to hear it. Anyway, happy holidays to all of you. You are all very good people.
Oh,
I know
Happy holidays to you as well.
And I thank you all too for being here. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist. He writes for the CNN.com and the San Diego Union-Tribune, and he joined us from San Diego. Lester Spence is a blogger and political science professor at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from member station WEAA in Baltimore. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney. And Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor, our political junkie, and they were kind enough to join us from our Washington, D.C. studios. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm off for most of next week, and longtime NPR personality Jackie Lydon will be keeping my seat warm, so let me be the first to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.